Okay, go ahead.
In my day, as I say, if you went 0 for 15, you were sent down to the minor leagues or you were sitting on the bench. Today, you can go 1 for 34 and get $1 million. Of course, there were not as many minor league teams today as there were then, so there's nowhere to bring them.
What modern-day ball player do you admire that would be comparable to any of the best of ball players in your era?
You do have a lot of several phenoms, superstars. Truthfully, I'm not into the game as much for one simple reason. I was a professional, and if and when I watch TV or see a game and I see an outfielder throw a ball 10, 20 feet away from the catcher on trying to get a runner, it aggravates me so much. Why did the man have to throw it that far away and miss him? I analyze it that way. I don't say, oh, that was a lousy throw. You know, I get very infuriated. Why did this man run with one out thinking it was two out? That's stupidity. Why don't these fellas have the basic fundamentals and make all of this money? Let somebody sit down and teach them like they were in kindergarten. Learn everything. Don't be a millionaire without knowing what you're doing. No?
Well, to follow that up, as a player who spent a lot of time in the minors and really learned his craft and then had enough on the ball to play with some of the great teams you did, and as you said, almost coach yourself, why do you think these players aren't getting the fundamentals as they come up?
Because there aren't that many minor league teams. A guy will be in Tidewater, and from Tidewater he comes to the major league, or from college to Tidewater, from Tidewater to the major league. In our day, well, I was fortunate, I skipped different classification, but there were many who went from D to C to B, A, double, and it's 5 years to become a polished ball player in the Dodger organization. Now, Montreal, in my estimation, could have beaten many major league teams because they were already at the top of their polish. They were ready for the big leagues. All they had to do is wait for somebody up there to leave so that they can go into that position. And it was the only other club that had a super, super farm system was the Chicago Cubs with Matthews. They were on an equal par to the Brooklyn Dodgers. Today, most of those ballparks are grass and weeds. There are no people going. They're shut down. People couldn't keep going. Money was scarce, and businesses have gone down the drain. So they're up there making crazy money and not knowing the fundamentals of the game. I saw fellas that don't know how to bunt the ball. I saw fellas that don't know how to slide into a base. Of course, there are, as I say, there are always the others that do know they have that little talent and they will be able to maintain their level. But as far as slumps, there's no reasonable answer, no explanation why it happens. You can get up one day and not feel great, and the pitcher is throwing the ball a little bit faster than you're ready to hit. It could be anything. Or you can hit four line drives right at somebody and go 0 for 4. Or you can break your bat four times and dribble the ball to the third baseman and beat him out for four. It's a very, very strange situation.
How about for you, the pitchers that you faced when you were up? Was there anybody that really had your number that really kind of owned you, as they say?
All right. In all sincerity, one of them who I considered the toughest fella I ever faced was a right-hander, Yul Blackwell. Now, Yul Blackwell was an extremely tall man, right-handed pitcher, who did not stride toward the plate when he threw underhand. He lifted his leg and moved it all the way over to third base and threw from third base so that it looked like the ball was coming out of his elbow. Now, he threw sinker balls. Now, I'm standing at the plate, and the first time I faced him, he threw sinker balls on the outside part of the plate for a strike. And I knew if I swung at it, I would hit the ball right back to him. So I said, okay. So I had two strikes. So I stepped 2 inches closer to the plate. And with the same motion, he threw a dinky little curve. A little curve. But it was enough to come in so that when I did swing, I hit it on my fist. So I said, wow, this guy, if I'm in close, hits on my fist. When I move away from the plate, it's a sinker ball on the outside part. The only thing I could do against him was make sure it was a strike and bunt. I was a fast runner. I'm a leadoff man. My job is to get on base. That's what I did. Warren Spahn, on the other hand, a left-handed pitcher, also could get me out quite a bit. But I bunted on him also. The one situation that I had, which I will never forget, was when Mike Garcia, who was called the Bear in Cleveland, the first time I faced him, I got 3-for-4, and I almost killed him with 2 shots. One time the glove was knocked off his hand, and his hand swelled up. One time he ducked, he almost got hit in the head. One time the ball went right between his legs. I got 3-for-4. 2 months later, he struck me out 3 times, and I, honest to God, I didn't see the ball. It was a blur. Now, it's the same man pitching 2 months later, so I have to say that he was hard to hit, but at the same time, I have to say that I hit him hard. But Warren Spahn and Yul Blackwell were two of the greats that gave me a little trouble here and there.
So you pretty much felt that you could handle most pitches, though. You didn't have a problem whether it was a curve or fastball.
Nope.
That you hit them all equally.
If I would have had a problem, I wouldn't have been a leadoff man.
Did you have any superstitions when you went up to bat that you used every time up, any little things?
We all had superstitions. Some of mine were not to step on the foul line, not to step on a bag coming in from the outfield, boning my bat with rosin and burning it, singeing it a little bit, pushing a nail through all the grain so that the air was punched out of it, wearing my dirty t-shirt if I got 3-4 hits, and not having it washed the next day so that it was like a piece of stiff cardboard, and put it on and it would sweat and it would be really rotten. But you're a superstitious ball player. That's what happened.
You mentioned earlier that you were a good fielder, had a very good arm. Did you guys practice your fielding a lot back in those days, and your throwing in different?
Yes, I would practice. Well, we always had practice before the games. They would hit fly balls so that you can determine how high the ball would go, if the wind was taking the ball, stuff like that. But in spring training, I would do a lot of practice, and I always practiced my weakest points. When I was hitting well, I didn't practice it. If my fielding on ground balls was weak, that's when I asked them, hit me ground balls. I want to check this out, see if I can pick it up and throw the runner out. That's what I would do.
How about, did you ever encounter, like, for yourself or any other players, like a fielding slump? Is that anything that ever happens to a player at all? Or is it just basically concentration?
No, well, when some of our players were going to slumps, naturally I would go over and say, come on. Don't worry about it. You'll come back. Water seeks its own level, I said. If you're a 280 hitter and you're only hitting 058, you'll end up hitting 280. Or if you're hitting 440 and you're a 280 hitter, you'll hit 280. I always said that water seeks its own level.
How about any umpires that stand out in your mind? Do you have any problems? You said that they kind of bared down when you came up. Did you feel that was helpful to you, or was it hurtful, or was there any umpires that gave you any special trouble?
Well, there were two umpires, Lon Warnke and Larry Goetz. Larry Goetz was the umpire in chief in those days, and it really wasn't that I had any problem with them, but these are two humorous incidents that you'll probably get a kick out of. Right after our first day that I was a Brooklyn Dodger, a newspaper writer, sports writer, asked for a ride home with me in my car. Now, you have to picture Cal Abrams, Brooklyn Dodger, on cloud 9. He is now a Brooklyn Dodger. Riding home with a man who is writing up the score. I had a 1-for-4, I believe. And he says to me, quote, Cal, what's the difference between umpiring in the major and minor league? And as I'm driving the car, the only thought I could say was, eh, which to me means nothing, no difference. Eh, that was what I said. Pick up the paper the second day going to the ballpark, and it says Cal Abrams blasts Major League umpires. Now I'm leading off, play ball, Larry Getz is behind the plate, and I hit the plate, and I'm standing, and all of a sudden I hear, you Bush son of a bee. Whatever comes near the plate, behind you, on the ground, over your head, are strikes. And suddenly my knees, my arms, my wrists, everything was trembling like a killer was in front of me with a gun. And I could not control what was going on with my system. I caught time, I backed away from the plate, and Mr. Getz said, I said to Mr. Getz, Mr. Getz, without turning around, mind you, because if you turn around, you're out. Mr. Getz, what are you doing to me? And he had the mask on. He says, what did you tell so-and-so, the newspaper man? I said, Mr. Getz, I said, eh. He said, that'll teach you to open your mouth. That was a true story. The other story was Lon Warnke. Lon Warnke, when he was a pitcher in his younger days, I imagine he wanted everything to be called strikes. But now he's an umpire, and it's a different ballgame. Now, he comes over. Now, when the Dodgers played the Giants, it was like cats against the dogs. It was tooth and nail and scratching and yelling and screaming and fighting constantly from dugouts. And one day he came over before a game, took off his mask, and he said, the first man that opens his mouth, I'm cleaning out the bench. Well, I was still gung-ho in those days, and I had to do something against the Giants. I wanted to beat them and show I was part of the team. So I got a brilliant brainstorm. The Boy Scouts have those semaphore flags. Of course, we didn't have flags, but I stood on the step of our dugout and made believe I had flags, and I started to raise my arms like the flag, A, B, C, and all that. He comes running over to me and says, you're out. Get out of the ball game. Now, this is the first time I'm ever thrown out of a game. And I said, why are you throwing me out? He said, I know how to spell. Okay. I paid $50 fine, and I was, it hurt me. That money was, you know. 2 months later, Mr. Warnke is behind the plate again. And play ball, and I'm leading off. I hit the plate, and suddenly my mind just had to open up and say something. And I said, Mr. Warnke, can you throw anybody out for thinking? And he said, no. I said, I think you're an SOB. Get out. And that's a true story.
That's a great story. You mentioned your run with the press when you first got up your own cloud nine, and the guy kind of misquoted you, to say the least. How were your other dealings with the press overall throughout your career? Well, give me a little bit of insight on how it was for you back then.
Well, right after that incident, I decided that it did not pay to be a lawyer or a big shot or opening your mouth to these newspaper people, because they can twist things around, and I discovered they can make or break you in baseball. So I was very leery and very careful of what I said to who I said, and I just kept my mouth shut and did the job as best as I could.
What do you dislike about the game today when you do take a chance to watch it? You mentioned a couple things. Is there anything just general?
Generally, as I said before, the thing I dislike intensely about the game are the bonehead plays, because as a professional, I don't like to see that made. I'm not objecting to these men making $2, $3, or $20 million. More power to them. We were unfortunate. We were in a different situation, different era. But when I see a man who is supposedly making that kind of money not doing the proper thing, he really doesn't belong there. Unfortunately, there are expansion clubs, and due to expansion, the caliber of the game, the caliber of the player, is not superior now, it's inferior. And now we're going to have another expansion, which means that even now it's going to be less again. So, you know, if this keeps going, I can see where a man batting 187 lasts for $5 million. if it happens. You know, it could happen.
Is there any player today, you said you don't watch that much, but is there any player today that you would kind of compare yourself to style-wise?
Paul Wehner and Pete Rose to a degree. Fellas of today, I'm not too familiar with some of the hitters of today. As I say, I really don't watch too much baseball, but of the past, Pete Rose, Paul Wehner were the kind of people I guided myself by. They swung just to hit the ball over the infield, and that's what I did.
A couple questions about some of your ex-teammates. Played with in Cincinnati, as you mentioned before, Kluszewski and Adcock and Rathensberg, and you also played with Ewell Blackwell when you were there in Cincinnati. Did you give him a little bit of a razz?
No. Now he's on my side, so we're friends.
How about Rathensberger? He was a pitcher. He was, I think, one of the most games that year.
Kenny was a heck of a pitcher. He came in, he saved an awful lot of games for him. Good pitcher. Nice left-handed man.
How about Don Larson before you guys in 54 in Baltimore? He lost 21 games. I believe he led the league in losses that year. Was he just like snake-bitten, or was it just he didn't have any stuff?
He had stuff. But, you know, you can have stuff, and if you're throwing the wrong pitch at the wrong time. Look what happens today. The two out in the ninth inning, and they need a home run. The pinch hitter comes up. Pitcher gets two strikes on him, and the guy's limping on one leg, Gibson, and he goes and hits a home run. I mean, things like that happen, and it would happen in our era, too. You can't stop that. That's nature.
Back in 1950, you were, when you were with the Dodgers, Gil Hodges became the first National League player in the 20th century to hit four home runs in a game. Was that, at that time, was that really a big thing? Did they kind of bring it out like they do in the press nowadays with a lot of the different things?
It was a great thing to have happened in our era, but you know, the media in our day isn't like, you can't compare it to the things that happen today. We live in Florida, and if I pick up the local paper in Florida, high school baseball, college baseball, little league baseball is exploding and expanding, and you read all about these kids that are getting trips and tryouts and this and that. It was not like that in our day. You had the box score, you had a rundown on the game. If the reporter liked you, well, Cal Abrams hit 2 for 4, he got his average up to 378, fine hitter, blah, blah, blah. And that was it. But today, Jose Canseco, he struck out 3 times, but his last time up, he got a home run. He's now getting $26 million. He's going to ask for $52 million. Yeah, it's a different ball game today. All different.
Being a native New Yorker, you mentioned your love of Ebbets Field. Do you remember the first time you played in Yankee Stadium? Was it a thrill as it was to play in Ebbets Field at all?
It was a thrill playing in all the ballparks, you know, because once I put that Dodger uniform on, and once I got into a ballpark, and once I played, and then when I was traded from club to club, it was an excitement, and it was an experience, and a feeling that you never forget. And I got better as the years went by, maybe because I was getting a few more bucks from the different owners, but my heart will always be in Brooklyn. You know, there's an expression, you can take Brooklyn out, you can take the man out of Brooklyn, but you can't take Brooklyn out of the man, and that's the truth. I love Brooklyn.
What would you say was your most memorable game?
My most memorable game? Well, there were a couple of things. First of all, I hit a Grand Slam home run, one in my lifetime, and I was very proud of it. I hit it against the Giants, Mike Garcia. Ruben Gomez, I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Mike Garcia. Yeah, Ruben Gomez. And when I hit 477 and I saw the headlines, that was a super feeling for me. Really lifted me up high. But basically, when I put on that first Dodger uniform, that was the greatest achievement that anybody can ask for.
On the other side of that coin, was there something that you would consider your worst game where just everything went wrong for you at plate in the field?
No, I honestly can't say that there was any game that I personally lost for the club When I was in a small slump, I was benched, but I felt badly about being benched, but couldn't wait to get back in again. But there was nothing, you know, I had one theory. When I came into the clubhouse at the end of the game, I would sit at my locker, look into my locker and think, recollect the game, and I would say to myself, did you do anything to lose the ball game? And if I could honestly say no, I got undressed, took my shower, and went outside. If there was something that I could have done, throwing the ball to third instead of second or whatever, and it was a stupid move on my part, then I would stay there and not take my shower and just think about it. Or maybe I didn't bunt properly at the time. Just sit and concentrate for a while and say, you dope, you, had you done this and that and blah, blah, blah. That's what I did.
What do you feel about expansion, moving to Miami now, living in South Florida? Is that something you're looking forward to at all?
I'm looking forward to it, but, you know, being here today, I've heard an awful lot of people saying they don't believe it's going to be in Miami. And yeah, there's a lot of talk about it. But I met that fellow who's going to have the controlling interest with $95 million. And I was wishing him good luck. I really, truly would like to see baseball come to my area. I want to see ball games. I'm hoping that they do have Major League there. And it would be great for all the people of all denominations to go to those games. I know they can fill up Miami Joe Robbie Stadium. I know that. It was proof the other day when they had 54,000 people there. Now, the Puerto Ricans, the Spanish, the blacks, the Jewish, and all denominations, I think, are looking forward to it.
When you were playing, did you have was there a player on your team or on an opposing team that really kind of you really liked to watch play, that really kind of got you excited about baseball?
Well, I love to watch Ted Williams swing. I love to watch Stan Musial swing. I love to watch Mickey Mantle swing. But more important, I loved it when I caught home run balls off of all three of them. And I did. I leaped into the stands on Ted Williams and caught one. I caught a ball 485 feet away from home in Yankee Stadium off Mickey Mantle. Of course, it was a lucky catch because it was an afternoon with the sun. I had put my glasses over my eyes, and I knew I was approaching the wall, and I was just about to leap up, but my shoulder rubbed the wall first, so I didn't get a completely high jump. My head hit the wall, my cap fell over, and my glasses went over my eyes, but I couldn't see anything, but the ball landed in the glove, and things like that. So, what can I say?
Cal, what did you do once you got out of baseball?
Oh, I owned a couple of cocktail lounges. I worked for the post office at one time. I worked for New York City off-track betting for 14 years. And I sold cars, insurance, real estate. I did a number of things with my life. But I'm most pleasantly doing, at this point, something that I really love. I'm an agent for ball players. I get them baseball card shows. I get them free cruises. And I love going to celebrity golf tournaments to make money for charities. That's what I'm doing right now.
That's great. Well, I want to thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Continued success.
Thank you.
Very much.
Team, or even when you were younger, pick up with your friends. How did that get started for you?
Well, way back when I was about 12 years old, we didn't have Little League. They call it Midget League baseball at that time. And it was like 10 to 12, and then you got into American Legion baseball. So I played in that Midget League. Then I went on to play the American League baseball, you know, American Legion baseball, and from there, high school, and then I played with some semi-pro teams when I was 14 years old, and just continued on to play, and finally signed a contract with the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1941, and went on to play in 1942 in Olean, New York, in the Pony League.
Do you recall the scouting signing for your first contract?
Oh, yeah. It was a fellow by the name of Heinie Groh and Dick Fisher. Dick Fisher was a guy in Buffalo, New York, who was kind of a bird dog, rather. But Heinie Groh is the guy that signed me, and I made $90 a month. And I got a bonus, a signing bonus of $500, $250 if I opened the season, and the other $250 if I finished the season.
It's pretty good money back in those days, though, huh?
Well, it wasn't too bad. I mean, existed, you know, but I like to play just like all the guys that signed those same kind of contracts that I did. And we had a lot of fun playing. It was a lot better than working in a factory or in a coal mine or something like that. So I enjoyed it very much.
Did you you were a first baseman when you were signed?
No, I was signed as a second baseman. I played second baseman for the whole first year, and